Jojo Moyes was raised in London. After a varied career, including stints as a minicab controller and a typer of Braille statements for the blind, she turned to journalism. Jojo spent a year at the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong and 9 years at Britain's The Independent. Luckily for her fans, Jojo has been a full-time novelist since 2002, when her first book, Sheltering Rain, was published. Since then, she's written 11 more novels, including Me Before You, which was nominated for Book of the Year at the UK Galaxy Book Awards. A New York Times reviewer had this to say about the book: "When I finished the novel, I didn't want to review it. I wanted to reread it." Jojo now lives and writes on a farm in Essex, England, with her husband and their 3 children. Today, we'll be getting the inside story about her chart-topping title, One Plus One. Welcome, Jojo. It's wonderful to have you with us on the Book Report.
Thank you for having me.
You write in One Plus One, families come in all different shapes and sizes. Introduce us to Jess, Tansy, and Nick.
Okay, well, Jess is a single mom. She's trying to raise 2 kids, one of whom is not actually her own. He's the son of her ex-husband, who has disappeared for 2 years. And she's like a lot of single moms in that she's just trying to keep food on the family table, keep her kids happy, and on the straight and narrow in the face of all sorts of temptations. And, you know, she's just kind of quietly heroic, really. And Tansy, her daughter, her biological daughter, is 10, and she's a child who doesn't necessarily fit the normal mold. She's actually a maths genius. She sees the world through numbers, and she's desperate to attend a fee-paying private school so that she can kind of really fulfill her ambitions to be a mathematician. But when your parents have no money, that's kind of a tough call. And then there's Nicky, her stepson, who is 16, who is struggling with bullies at the school that he's at. He's a bit of a goth. He wears mascara. He doesn't fit into a small town. And he's the sort of living proof for Jess of a saying I once heard, which is that you're only as happy as your unhappiest child. And the whole of the early part of the book is just filled with a kind of drumbeat of worry for Jess, is wondering what's going to happen to Nicky next.
Yeah. You know, Marty, who is, I would call him a deadbeat dad, features prominently in the story. And I'm not sure you were hard enough on him. How have other readers responded to him?
Do you know, you are not the first person to say that. Yeah, maybe I was a little light on him. I thought it would be really easy to turn Marty into a kind of pantomime villain. I didn't want him to just be a straightforward maintenance-avoiding dad. I think he's like a lot of men who find themselves in a position where they are just totally out of their depth. He's basically a weak man, and he doesn't really want to lose touch with his kids, but he's just not quite strong enough to maintain it either. And the thing about fathers like that is what you have to remember is it doesn't matter what anybody thinks about whether he's, you know, a really bum dad, but what matters is whether the children are allowed to love him anyway. And I guess what Jess does is she puts aside her personal feelings about him and lets them still love their dad, which is kind of a heroic thing in itself.
Absolutely. And then there's Ed, who's a geeky kind of a genius who got in trouble when he wasn't using his brain for a solution to a problem. Fill us in about him.
That's a very diplomatic way of putting it.
Thank you.
Basically, you know, my husband works in technology, and one of the things that kind of amuses me is you have a raft of young men who have made huge fortunes by being good at software and at binary code and numbers and all the rest of it, but without necessarily the business or even common sense to go with the position of great power. And that's where we find Ed. You know, he's basically a geek who is totally out of his depth, and as a result makes a decision, not with his brain, as you say, to do with an ex-girlfriend, and then finds himself being prosecuted for insider trading. And so when he meets Jess, both of them are at a kind of crucial point in their lives. He's trying to avoid telling his parents what's happened to him, and he's kind of running away from what's happened to him. And she is desperately trying to find a way to get her daughter to a maths Olympiad to earn the money, to win the money so that she can go to this school.
Right. You know, the road trip is central to your story. Did you draw inspiration from classic novels that featured a road trip?
Yes, you know, I am an absolute fan of the road trip, and I've always wanted to write one. And, you know, I think one of my favourite films ever is Thelma and Louise. I also love Little Miss Sunshine, On the Road. You know, you name it. It's that perfect thing of putting people in a close confine and seeing what happens when they're forced to rub up next to each other day after day. Because there's no greater way to find out someone's strengths and weaknesses than to have to sit next to them for hour after hour, as anybody who's done a long-haul flight knows.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess also the book that I wrote before that, a book called The Girl You Left Behind, was a huge sort of sprawling epic that began in the First World War and ended in the modern day. And so what I tend to do is write a book in reaction to the last one. So what I wanted to do this time was to write something that was very small, very tight, a very small cast of characters, and that became my road story book, really.
We're speaking with JoJo Moyes on The Book Report. You know, your characters are quirky but very believable. Did they just pop up in your brain fully formed, or how do you create them?
Well, sometimes they do, if I'm lucky, but mostly they don't. Mostly I have to kind of build them almost mechanically. I have a whole routine that I do where before I start writing a book, I go out and I buy a kind of A4 hardbacked pad, no lines, very specific, and a really nice black pen. And I set about creating each of these characters. And so I ask myself as many questions as I can about them. You know, where do they come from? What do their parents do? What do they like? What's their motivation? And then I put them through tests as well. I say, you know, if they were to come down and raid the fridge in the middle of the night, how would that be? You know, would there be food in the fridge? Would they be naked? Would they avoid the food? Would they eat compulsively? And what you do is you put them through these little tests and you find out an awful lot about your character. And then what happens is, by the time you start writing them, you're probably not even going to use 5% of the information that you've compiled about them. But what it does is it changes the way they come onto the page, and it changes the way they respond to each other. So you already know that person, which really makes, I think it makes it come alive. And the times that I've gone wrong with my writing are the times that I haven't done enough work on the characters beforehand.
That was really illuminating. I've never heard it described that concisely. You know, this book puts a spotlight on bullying. What led you to focus on this issue now?
Well, you know, I have two teenage children and one younger one, and I've spent a lot of time in schools and around schools and listening to what my kids have to say. And bullying is a real issue. Thankfully, not for mine so much, but I think the issues that kids today face are so much more complex than what we had to face. You know, when I grew up, I got bullied a little at my first school, and it was a kind of matter of name-calling and pushing around in the playground, and then you went home and told your mum, and your mum came in and you begged her not to, and it was all sorted out. Now it's much more insidious. Now it's on social media, it's on people's phones, there's, you know, hacking of web pages. This, you only have to open a newspaper to see the kind of amazingly inventive ways that kids find to torture each other. And I just think it's really hard for them. And unless parents are prepared to kind of really listen and be creative and non-judgmental in their response, it's very hard for these kids to negotiate this stuff without help. So, yeah, I guess I just wanted to show that you can be a really caring parent, but you're still not necessarily going to be able to find your way around some of these issues without help.
You were a successful journalist for 10 years. What was it that made you leave journalism and begin writing novels?
Well, it was a couple of things, really. One is that I just always wanted to write books. You know, I wrote 3 books while I was a journalist that didn't get published. But also, you know, I had my first child. I used to be one of those reporters who ran around with a passport in my handbag. You know, I never knew what I was going to do from one day to the next. And when you have a baby, you realize you can't live like that. You just, you know, you've got to know that you're going to be there at 6 o'clock. So I guess I just started to work harder and harder at my writing in my spare time. And now I look back and I can't believe that I had that much energy. But luckily for me, by the time I was pregnant with my second child, I got a book deal. And so, yeah, it was logistics. But I did miss journalism for about 2 years. I really, really missed it. I missed the camaraderie of it because, you know, when you write by yourself in a room all day, it can be quite lonely.
Yes. Any final thoughts on 1+1?
Well, I really like when I'm reading to be made to laugh and cry and not necessarily know what's coming next. And I really hope that if readers read this, that that's a little bit of what they'll get from this book.
Well, thank you so much, Jojo, for joining us today. I love the book. I really recommend it.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.